Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast, the podcast where we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope that it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors of sexual abuse too. We hope that you find it interesting, but more than that, if you are a survivor of sexual abuse, we hope that you find our discussion empowering. Hello, podcast listeners. I'm Alan Collins at Hugh James Solicitors. I'm the partner who heads up the abuse team. And in today's podcast, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Reg Poulous, who is a US-based international law attorney. Hello, Reg.
Hi, how are you, Alan?
Not so bad. Thank you very much. And it's a great pleasure to have you on this podcast. And in this particular podcast, we are going to be discussing people's tribunals and the question, do they achieve anything? So before we delve into people's tribunals and try and answer that question, please tell our audience, Reg, a little bit about your background and how you came to be involved in people's tribunals.
Yes, thank you. It's an honor to be invited. I love listening to your podcast that you've been doing. So basically, I'm an international criminal law attorney that is based in the United States. I work with different groups that are impacted by international crimes such as genocide and crimes against humanity. And the way I got involved in people's tribunals actually started with you. Actually, I worked with you on the UK Child Sex Abuse People's Tribunal, which started around 2015 and then didn't end until 2016. We had an inkling of a conversation beginning in 2014.
That's right. It was quite an experience, certainly for me. And perhaps it'd be useful if we can remind or explain to podcast listeners who may not be familiar with a people's tribunal what they are. Do you want to make a stab at explaining what a people's tribunal is?
Yeah, sure. The way I always describe them or define them to people is that they are informal legal movements. So they use some of the legal language that we'll see used in courts or commissions or things like that or inquiries, but it is an informal in that it is not, they're not tribunals that have the authority that a state tribunal would have, which is to issue warrants or subpoenas or the like. So they're part of larger movements, but I tend to see them as kind of informal legal movements.
Yeah, well, basically, it's where people come together of their own volition to hold their own inquiry, basically, isn't it? So, you know, the state often holds an inquiry. So, for example, here in the UK, we've got the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse. So that's an inquiry set up by government, basically, to look into that particular subject. So we have formal inquiries and established under the Inquiries Act to look into specific questions and matters and issues, whereas a people's tribunal is basically, as I see it, a grassroots equivalent of an inquiry without the formal state apparatus behind it.
Right. And the people have more power, or I would say maybe control in a good way, of how they want their tribunal, their people's tribunal to look like.
Yeah. So in our experience with the People's Tribunal that looked into sexual abuse a couple of years ago, we were approached, weren't we, by some survivors and their supporters because right. They were frustrated with the state and wanted to hold their own inquiry.
Yeah, and it was empowering. That was their decision to do it. It was not initiated by a legal lawyer or anything like that. It was kind of their vision and what they wanted to achieve with it.
Yeah, they wanted to throw a sharp ray of light, so to speak, or sharp beam of light, rather, onto specific issues concerning child sexual abuse here in the UK. They wanted various issues, such as what had been going on, what had happened, problems with access to justice, the impact mentally, physically on individuals and society. And they found some judges who were prepared to sit and listen to the evidence. And those judges then produced a report which was presented to the UK Parliament.
Yes. And that was, I think, it was a significant moment for everybody who had worked on it. Because one of the other aspects that I think people don't realize is everybody who works in the majority of these, if not all of these people's tribunals, are working pro bono, meaning for no cost. So they're fronting the cost of themselves for travel and expenses. And I think to see the end result of what all that work does for them, it was a really significant moment, especially, I believe, for the survivors that we had involved.
Well, it was. I know for me, I had never worked on anything like this before. It was an enormous privilege to do so, and it was very educational. I was astonished that it actually traveled the distance. You know, it was powered by survivors and their supporters. And it was astonishing that they were able to take this vehicle that they had created and get it to its ultimate destination, which was the UK Parliament and the presentation of the report.
I've never asked you, Alan, but I've always been curious because you litigate a lot of these cases and you've worked on many inquiries. I'm sure anybody who looks up your bio sees that you are very much a champion of survivors within the legal realms and outside of it. But I was wondering, what was your reaction to something like this? Because it's not, there's nothing traditional about it.
Well, as a lawyer, you're very used to tradition, precedent. You know, it's, you subconsciously follow certain tracks and paths because that's how you're trained and you're used to working in a very established and traditional way of working, you know, with the courts and the judges and fellow lawyers. And so this was completely different. So I had to sort of rewire myself a little bit in order to be hopefully of some use to survivors and their supporters in actually delivering this people's tribunal. So yeah, it was very educational for me. And I would hope that one day I would get the opportunity to do something similar.
Yeah. Well, it seems like they're proliferating in terms of movements, which is why you were part of the volume we put together that was released in December on People's Tribunals.
Oh, yes, you got to plug the book. Yes. Yes. So, audience, there's a book on all of this. So if you're really, really interested, and I mean really, really interested, there's a book that came out under Reggie's name and editorship called People's Tribunals, Human Rights and the Law, Searching for Justice. And tell us a little bit about the authors, the contributors.
Well, you're one of them, which was, thank you for being a part of it, because I think that I definitely wanted to highlight the Child Sex Abuse People's Tribunal. And the other ones are movements that, so like, for instance, the Iran Tribunal, which took place in The Hague, which was organized by a mix of different people, lawyers and activists and survivors of the massacres in Iran that took place in the 80s. I think that's, they focused on a specific time period for their People's Tribunal, otherwise it would have been huge. There's one on women focused on a feminist tribunal that happened in the Balkan region, which I found very interesting. I actually didn't know about that happening. And then some of the other topics that we picked are one where it hasn't happened yet. There's a piece in there on whether or not a People's Tribunal on the Japanese medical experiments that took place, should there be one and the necessity for one. And then one that just recently finished in February of this year, the final report came out, which is the China Tribunal. And then we have an ecological one. So what I wanted to do was really give people a breath of ideas on how many different types there can be and how many different movements there are. And the beginning of the book is kind of theoretical. It talks about people's tribunals and the place of international law and whether these are really good responses or not. And so then we have, you know, kind of the criticisms of it too, because I think they're not without criticism, but the authors of the book have all participated in a people's tribunal or have researched it enough that they were passionate enough that they wanted to contribute to it.
Okay, so you've got a variety of scenarios and situations there. So pulling that together, are people's tribunals seen as a legitimate response to a quest for justice or a response to injustices?
Yes, I do think they can be seen as a legitimate response to injustice, but I think whether or not it completes or it's enough is really dependent on the initiators and survivors and victims who then have to take whatever the product of that is and continue on or get whatever their end result is. So in some cases, perhaps the People's Tribunal, because it was the discussion and there is a record, that is enough. And so in that case, that is a legitimate response because that's what the survivors, initiators, activists, maybe that's all they wanted. in other cases, that's clearly not enough and people want justice. You know, they want to continue and it's just to set the record like, hey, look, there is a problem. We had some independent people look at it. Now we want more done with it.
Yeah. So in some situations, it's a slow burn process. So I'm sort of thinking of the People's Tribunal that we had here on child sexual abuse. I think it would be fair to say that that in itself didn't bring about some kind of dramatic change or reaction. It's slow burn. It's helping to change the debate, even if it's only in a subtle way.
Yeah. And I think if somebody really looked at that report that the independent panelists did for the child sex abuse, I think there's a lot of great recommendations that were made that, because sometimes people think, well, that issue maybe is only unique to that place. And that's not true. We know that for something like child sex abuse, it's prevalent around the world. But those recommendations could influence maybe other countries if people are willing to look at it. And I think that's one of the challenges with people's tribunals is whether state governments will acknowledge that they are legitimate movements.
Indeed, because, you know, a people's tribunal in many ways is so far removed from the state and is often a reaction to the state not doing something. You have to have in the back of your mind whether the state is actually going to take any notice of you. And that's why I think in some situations it must be a very slow process. All that you can hope to do sometimes is change the debate, change attitudes. And I think that is possibly the situation here in the UK with the People's Tribunal into CSA, because the report was presented to Parliament and we had that enormous privilege of being able to go into Parliament and present the report to this parliamentary audience and so on, which was absolutely great, because some politicians were receptive, others perhaps not. And so you just have to see this as just as one step along a very rocky path to try and change attitudes, change debate, and change the whole ethos of the way CSA is viewed and approached in this country.
Yeah. I think one of the things that would help with assisting people's tribunals to gain more recognition is the fact, and I noticed this across the board with many people's tribunals, is when they're completed, even though I perceive them really as part of a wider movement, right? Because the movement in the UK to combat child sex abuse has not stopped. Obviously, there's a government inquiry going on. But that report and reports like it, like with the Iran tribunal or with the one that was done in Bosnia and all these other kinds of tribunals that exist, people's tribunals that exist, is what do people do with the reports after they're done? Because a lot of work goes into producing them. And then if they sit on a shelf after that, well, you know, people forget and people then never hark back to it and look at and see what's going on. And I think that that causes sometimes people to forget that there were movements or that there was significant reports that have come out that recommendations that are proper.
And of course, that does happen with government inquiries and reports. You know, government can have an inquiry at great expense and trouble. A report is produced and everyone throws their hands up in horror. And then the report is promptly forgotten about until the next time there's some horrific scandal. And there's another inquiry and the inquiry thinks, well, actually, we sort of looked at all of this a couple of years ago. But anyway, that's another subject. But getting back to people's tribunals, I think what was extremely important is that survivors got a foot in the door with the politicians. You know, the People's Tribunal was seen seriously, had a serious panel of judges. The report was presented to Parliament, and survivors got a foot in the door there. And subsequently, survivors have had the ability to talk to politicians, for example, at the all-parliamentary party group meetings that have taken place in the last couple of years, where politicians have met survivors in respect of various issues. So I see it as all part of a long campaign or exercise to change the dynamic. And I think from my limited experience, that's where the power of people's tribunals really matters.
Yeah. And I think change is, you know, I see it as slowly but surely. So sometimes it's not going to be as fast as we want it, but it's definitely a step in the direction that people want to move in, which is talking about the issues, raising awareness. And they're great tools for raising awareness.
Indeed. So here we are, 2020, in the midst of the COVID pandemic. Any current developments with people tribunals across the globe?
You know what? I think some of the new ones that have been talked about and discussed they're not related to COVID-19, so that it'll be interesting to see whether any emerge from it. But some of the ones that I know people are starting to look at are actually new versions of, maybe they don't call it people's tribunals, but they're calling them citizen panels or citizen assemblies. To me, it looks like the same concept, but really around climate change and topics like that, that I think people want more global movement on. So it'll be interesting to see how those shape up and what those look like in terms of format.
Well, thank you, Reg. Really interesting subject. Personally, and I hope our audience found it interesting too. So thank you, Reg, and thank you for podcast listeners. And please tune in to our next podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. If you'd like to speak to us about something you've heard today, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.